So we're talking about the kingdom of Christ, and this is the last one. In the next week, we have Jonathan with us, and he will preach for 2 weeks, and I would invite you to come this next week, because we will be deciding if we, and he will too, whether or not we call him alongside to be a part of what we're doing. So kind of an important time for us, and we will want to hear from you. We'll have time after those weeks to talk through it as a family. We want to win. We want to win. That's part of who we are, especially as Americans, right? I want to win. I actually tuned in. I don't watch football, but because Pastor Corey and Brad were at a football game, I actually watched that game, and because I'm from Texas, and I saw the startling loss, I need a recount because the Cowboys lost. And that ain't right, man. I think there's something wrong with the voting machine. Something was going on. I need a recount, but their Green Bay Packers took it, and they froze. What was the temp when you got out? 29 degrees and holding, yeah. We want to win. Like, even I don't even watch football. And Cowboys, I'm from Texas. Hey, they should win. I was upset they didn't win. I was happy for you guys, really. But I want them to win. We want to say, see, I told you so. We want that. We want to be winners. We just have that. It's part of who we are. Let me do it this way. Past 2 years, regardless of where you stood, I'm not going political, stay with me. Past 2 years, whether you were pro-jab or anti-jab, or agnostic, whether you wanted the mask, didn't want the mask, refused to wear the mask, insisted everyone else did, you want to be able to say, see, I told you now, don't you? You want all the info to come in, say, see, I told you, and have them, whoever the other side is, say, goodness, you were right. Hey, keep waiting. That ain't happening. We want that, though. We want to have better numbers. We want to have the most. We want to be able to look at the other side, whoever they are, and say, look, I won. Look at this. The thing is, let's just take the past 2 years. Even if whoever the other side is said, you were right, I shouldn't have gotten the shot, or you were right, I should have. It's not going to satisfy. You just go on to the next controversy. It won't last. It never does. Christ followers, early church, as he is preaching, and he's going to go to the cross, and he's going to die on the cross for their sins in their place. He's going to resurrect. He's going to leave them. And he says, I'm not taking you out of the world. I'm leaving you in the world. I'm going to send you. He knows that they will face a world more hostile than they have ever known, and that's true. Jews who came to know Christ were kicked out of families, were disfellowshipped. There are times in Orthodox communities that happens even today. You come to know Christ, you get baptized, that's it, you're out. You've gone apostate. Gentiles even more so. Gentiles will come to know Jesus. They would refuse anymore to bend the knee to their household God, to their village God, to their trade God if they were in a trade. And anytime anything bad happened, they would blame the Christian. Christians were kicked out of families. They were kicked out of villages. They were kicked out of their trades. In fact, in the marketplace in some of the places, you needed to be willing to bow to Caesar and proclaim that he was a demigod before they would allow you to buy and sell. And so there are Christians that went hungry simply because they loved Jesus. That happened. He knew they would face these kinds of things. And if you remember the stories, you remember the Apostle Paul before he was Paul. He jailed people. There were people who were starved. There were people who were killed simply because they loved Jesus. Right? We know the context of this. And I know, I've heard the sermons. I know how to do it. I bet you I could do it. I bet you I could build it up, and things are tough, and the culture's against us, and we're going to stand on Christ. I got to tell you, in the end, pause, dramatic effect, we win. I bet you we could do an applause line. Don't trust worship leaders. But here's the thing, listen, that's not how Jesus approaches it, knowing what his people are going to face. He doesn't approach it as a we win. He approaches it with the Beatitudes. Blessed are you when they persecute you. Blessed are you when. Blessed are you when. I got you. I'm here with you. It's going to happen. Take heart. I'll never leave you. I'll never forsake you. It's never an in your face. It's never a in the end, we win. And when we win, you're usually talking about we win over. We're over those people, that culture, those people who are against us. And that is never, listen, that's never the gospel message. You don't ever win over. You don't ever beat other people. That is not the gospel message. It's not where we're supposed to be. And really, it's not much comfort when you're struggling to feed your family, when your wife has just heard that she's got stage 4 cancer. A friend of mine in ministry just lost his young wife to cancer. That's really not much comfort. Well, it's okay, brother. In the end, we win. Dude, I just lost my wife, and I've got two young kids. That's not a comfort, right? When you're facing soft persecution, I won't even go into what's going on now, but soft persecution. When the marriage is ending. It's okay, brother. In the end, it's okay, sister. No. Is it worth it to follow Jesus? Sure. But is it about winning in the end? Not so much. Not so much. Here's what winning really is. It's what Jesus did, not what we do. Jesus has already done this on the cross, right? We'll get there at the end today. Stay with me. We'll do Colossians 2. Jesus has already won. It's not something we do. It's something he has already done. We're just waiting for the final trump. We're just waiting for it all to be brought to a close. He's already done this thing. It is for the people for whom Christ died, not against them. We're not winning against anyone. And it's not our goal, not ever, at least not the way we use it. We don't win over those people. In fact, we want to win those people because we used to be those people, right? And if you're Gentile, you definitely were historically. We want to win them. So we're going to start at the end of a parable. It'll seem strange. Matthew 13. We've gone through it before, so I didn't want to rehash it. You remember a parable of seed and the sower, and a sower went out to sow his seed, and some fell on the hard path, and that was the heart that wouldn't let it in. Satan comes and steals the seed. Some seed fell upon shallow ground and had rocks and roots, and when the hard times came, they fell away. Some seed fell upon soil that had like thorns and thistles and other plants in the way, and that was the riches and the... And it didn't have much nutrients with it. Some seed fell on good soil, and that's where we jump in at the end of a parable. Still other seed fell on good ground and produced fruit. Some 100, some 60, some 30 times what was sown. This is the end of a parable. And he says that some of that seed produced 100 times what was sown. I went back and I was reading. When Jesus says this, he's talking about a miraculous harvest. That would never happen. Especially with the abilities they had at that time. They don't produce that much seed. He's talking miraculous. The small little seed produces so much fruit in that life, through that life, a miraculous harvest. Why? It was good soil, which means it didn't have that rocky stuff down there where the root wasn't much. It would spring up immediately with joy, and as soon as hard times come, it fell away. Have you seen believers that are like, oh, I love Jesus, as soon as I go through a hard time? Yeah, I used to be a Christian. No. No. No fruit. It's not talking about that one that, man, I love Jesus, but I also love this. I'm going to run after this job and ignore Jesus in my relationship with my family and my relationship. I love Jesus, but I got so many cares. I got so many worries. No, this is good soil. This is tilled soil. It's been cleared of all those sorts of things, and it produces a miraculous harvest. And the point is how much is never as important as how faithful we are. It's not how much was sown. It's tiny. But look what God can do. It's just a little. It's how faithful we are and how willing we are to trust and obey. And then, and you need to know this, God don't add. God multiplies. A little bit of seed, 30, 60, 100 times what was sown. And we're not talking money. Hold on. We're not talking money, I promise. Although I was listening to Let the Bodies Hit the Floor on the way here, and I was thinking Benny Hinn. So anybody want to come up here, I'll slap you. No, that was wrong. We'll edit that out. It'll be okay. Let's talk about fruit in our lives. That's what we're talking about. We're talking about fruit, the fruit of the Spirit. You guys know this one, right? Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control, humility, serving others rather than self. A little bit of the word, a little bit of, and then as we till the soil, as we give it over to God, as we live surrendered lives, he does things in us that we couldn't do in and of ourselves. He multiplies it, and it flows out of us so that it blesses others. That's fruit. And then from the end of a sermon right there, basically, we go into, he presented another parable to him. A parable is an earthly story with a spiritual meaning. Another parable, the kingdom of heaven, because that's what he preaches, may be compared to a man who sowed good seed in his field. But while people were sleeping, his enemy came, and his enemy sowed seeds among the wheat, and he left. The word for what the enemy sowed, he sowed what was probably darnel. Darnel was outlawed in the Roman Empire. Darnel was what an enemy would do, and he didn't want somebody to produce a good crop. He was afraid he'd take his profits. So he would sow darnel, and darnel would interweave within the wheat. in the roots. And it was using the same resources as the roots. And if you try to pull it up, you'd pull up the wheat as well. That's a problem, right? And so it's going to get the same water. It's going to use the same soil nutrients, the same resources, and it's sowed right there among the wheat. By the time you realize it, you can't do anything about it. When the plant sprouted and it produced grain, then the weeds also appeared. The landowner's servants came to him and they said, "Didn't you sow good seed in your field? Didn't you make sure it was, you bought good seed?" "Yeah, I bought good seed." "Then where did the weeds come from?" "An enemy did this," he told them. And they got to think, like, all right, if an enemy, we need to take care of this. We need to maybe take this stuff out. We need to, and so that's what they say. "So do you want us to go and pull them up?" the servants ask him. "No," he said. "You pull up the weeds. Or when you pull up the weeds, you might also uproot the wheat with them." Here's the thing. Here's what he's saying. We don't have the expertise to know how to do this without uprooting the good crop. We don't know how to do this, and so this isn't your job. Let them both grow together until the harvest. But we're going to have to make sure that both of them, the darnel and the wheat, have water. Yes. They're both going to get the nutrients. Yes. They're both going to be tended to. Yes. Both are going to be protected from animals, enemies, and enemies. Yes. We have to take care of both. This is a kingdom parable. Don't forget. An earthly story with a spiritual meaning. The landowner says, at harvest time, I'll take care of it. I will tell the reapers, gather the weeds first, tie them in bundles, burn them, and collect the wheat in my barn. And here's what Jesus is doing. He's answering a question because he's not talking about the church. He's talking about the world as a whole. And here's the question he's answering. Jesus, you're going to rise up against the Gentiles and establish a kingdom for the people of God, for us, aren't you? You're going to do that, aren't you? Like right now, right? Now hang on, we'll come back to this, but for now, because Jesus will circle back around. But for now, two things. First of all, individually, our growth in the kingdom, this is from the seed and the sower, our growth in the kingdom means we cooperate with God in weeding out anything that isn't good soil for the word. In our own personal lives, it's not worrying about anybody else, what they're doing. This is us. And there's two things you can do to weed out those things and allow God to really grow and produce fruit in you. Two things. You ask this question, does it stoke my desire for God or diminish it? It's a great question. Does it stoke my desire, this thing that I'm into, this thing I've treasured, this thing I believe, this thing I'm doing behaviorally, does it stoke my desire for Jesus, make me love him more, or does it diminish it? If it diminishes it, you don't need it. Second thing, can I glorify God with this? Now, careful, because that's where the legalists say, you can't glorify God at a brewery. You ain't seen me at a brewery. I'm just saying. Careful, that may not be your conviction, but hold on. Can you glorify God with it? Now, this is individual. This is seed and sower. And then check this out. Looking bigger picture, growth in the kingdom also means that there are weeds. People we know. People that are in our lives. People that are in our world. They use resources, and they need to be tended and protected and cared for. But God doesn't need weed eaters. He doesn't need people who are picking out the weeds and plucking them up. That's not our job. And listen, you need to hear this. Listen to me, church, because some of you, I know and I see it and I understand the heart and I don't know what you've been through, but let me tell you, that whole like, if they're not serving you, cut them off. Hang on, what if their ministry? What if God had a reason to have them in your life? We use toxic way too much. Oh, I get it, there are some. But not every person that pisses you off is a toxic person. In fact, if everybody you know is a toxic person, dude, get a mirror. It ain't all them. You know what I'm saying? There are times you have to separate. I get that. But we're really quick to separate in order to serve self. Oh, yeah, right? You know, if you call them more than they call you, well, good, you're ministering to them then. Could you still have the ability to pour into their life? Then do it as Jesus directs. Be spirit-led in that. God doesn't need weed eaters. It's not our job to pull them up and say, you're out, and you're out, and you're... Lord, what do you have for me? If I'm in their life as a believer, what's my purpose in their life? How can I help them? See, it takes you out of me serving to them serving. That's Philippians 2. Esteem others better than yourself. Look out not only for your own interests, but the interests of others. Grace, even if they don't know Jesus, they're a weed. Protect, even if. Resources, even if. Care for, even if. Especially the vulnerable. Watch out for them. We're supposed to do that. And even the victimizers, even those who aren't vulnerable, they're victimizers. Listen, this is the hard part for you and me, especially in this day at this time. I want the victimizers to know Jesus. Because here's what happens. When you have somebody who is a victimizer, let me just take it because I always want to go one extra step and upset you. So let me do that because it's always fun for me. The person who's telling the kindergartner or the first grader or the second grader, I don't know their motives. Maybe they're a really good person, but they're saying, you need to choose your gender. Are you attracted to boys or girls? Listen, they're attracted to no one. They're a kindergartner. They're attracted to a rock at a particular moment, and then they'll throw it at a friend the next moment. That person, taking away the innocence of children that God has given them, makes me angry. When they come to know Christ and they follow Him, they stop being a victimizer. That's what I want for them. Oh, yeah, I want to protect the kids, absolutely. But I want the victimizer. And we could go in a whole lot of directions with this. I want them to know Jesus. Because I remember the Apostle Paul as a victimizer. He took away mommies and daddies, drug them off to jail. But then he became somebody who won people to Christ and actually died for the gospel. Well, Jesus will come back to this parable in a moment, but let's go forward just a little bit. He presented another parable to him. The kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed that a man took and sowed in his field. The mustard seed was probably the smallest of the seeds that you would plant in your field at that time in that region. He says it's the smallest of those seeds, but when it is grown, it is taller than the garden plants and becomes a tree, so that the birds of the sky come and nest in its branches. It was this tiny little seed that you put under the soil and watered it and cared for it and tended it. It says it becomes a plant so large that it changes the very environment of that field and blesses many. Kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed. Is it about power? No, it's tiny. Is it about winning? No. It's about influence. It's about being. Simply by being what it is and being tended, as the kingdom of heaven grows up, it blesses many. That's the kingdom that we're a part of. Blesses. He told them another parable. Kingdom of heaven is like leaven that a woman took and mixed in 50 pounds of flour until all of it was leaven. All you need is a little bit, right? Just the agent that helps it rise. You just need a little bit of that in there, a little bit of the yeast, a little bit of the leaven, and it goes into 50 pounds, and it works its way throughout all of it. Listen, the kingdom, according to Jesus, is about lights, not lasers. Hold on, I'll explain it in a minute. Salt, not physical separation. It's not about our power over, but influence, which blesses all. And so Jesus said, you're the light of the world. Let your light so shine before men that they see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. He didn't say you're the laser. A laser is a focus light, becomes a weapon and hurts and cuts. The kingdom of heaven isn't a laser, it's a light. It is salt, not physical separation. What I mean is, when I get salt, I get thirsty. I don't know about you guys, but we had Thanksgiving yesterday. I'm still drinking water. Like, I woke up this morning, just parched. I was pretty sure I was going to die. Tongue stuck to my... I tried to wake my wife up. I couldn't talk. Good food. Salt makes you thirsty. When people who love Jesus get around those who don't, and we live out the truth, we make them thirsty for Christ, just as the light points a way to them and illuminates. Salt makes them thirsty for Christ. And if we physically separate and stay away from them, we're never near them, we miss the opportunity to bless them. The Bible says, go and make disciples, not cloister in little buildings and stay there and only have Christian friends and only be in your holy huddle where it's comfortable. Go, make disciples of all nations. The kingdom is not about power over. America is about power over. Gentiles are. We looked at that. Jesus talked about that. It's about influence, which blesses all. Lights shine, lasers cut. Let your light shine. We go and we make disciples. And if you think about it, just historically, and you think about what has happened in our world, because you've heard now, if you've been in America, if you're tuned into what's going on culturally, you've now heard that being a Christian is a net negative. That Christians are responsible for a lot of the hate and the phobic and the... You've heard these things, right? Christianity is a net positive, always has been. Everywhere, listen to me, church, everywhere the gospel goes, women are set free. We just see it. We just saw this. We just saw this recently. We left Afghanistan in a great, wonderful way, I'm sure. Sarcasm is a spiritual gift. Taliban took over. Women lost their driver's licenses. Can't go to school. Can't be in government anymore. Everywhere Christianity goes or a Christian-informed nation goes, women are set free. You heard about how oppressed women are right now? You wouldn't be able to talk about being oppressed except that you're so free. Women are set free everywhere. And yes, I get you. There's small little enclaves, the small little cults, and where in the name of Christ they do some terrible things, and we would always stand against that. But the message of the gospel sets women free. Jesus chose to reveal himself first after the resurrection to who? Yeah, women. And those dumb disciples. Y'all must be hysterical, must be having a spell. No, you're just dumb. Listen to them. Jesus chose them. When kids were running the streets and didn't have parents and nobody would take care of them, it was George Mueller who loved Jesus, who said, we're going to build orphanages by faith. And kids were taken care of because we love children. We love their innocence. We want to protect them. And for every guy that you say, well, he was a priest or he was a pastor or he worked in a church and he abused some kid, I'm watching my words. I know the kids are here. For every one of them, there are so many more who said we want to watch out for, protect, and care for, feed. There are so many others who've come alongside and said, I will be a dad to you because your dad left. I'll be a mom to you, some older woman, because your mom left. That's what we do. We've talked about this before. In some of the bigger cities, you go and you see Methodist Hospital, Baptist Hospital, Presbyterian Hospital, predestined to be there. We see these things. Right? Predestined to get healed or to die. We see these things. They have the names there. They may have left the original mission, but they were started by Christians because Christians care about the well-being of their culture, their society. Our educational system was built upon Christianity at the start. Do you know our universities, our college system began in America as seminaries to train men to go give the gospel? That's where I get mission drift. I know what's happened. We got the rescue mission in Roanoke. There are soup kitchens. There are homeless shelters. I don't see a whole lot of those in the name of anything other than Jesus. That's where they get started. And I'm not putting down others. I'm saying that's where those things get their start. I remember when AIDS was coming around, and nobody really knew exactly how it transferred. And can you get it from their spit if they happen to cough on you or sneeze on you? Can you get it from holding their hand? And as people with AIDS were dying, and it was horrific the way they died, you know who was there holding their hands? Christians. I knew some holding hands with somebody who could kill the Christian, just being there for them. Guys, we're designed, we're meant to protect and to be a blessing to our culture. And they won't always like it, but that's who we are. That's what the kingdom is. We want to bless those around us. We do. And don't let the culture tell you that we're in such a war that they're the enemy. They're not the enemy. They're people who don't know Jesus yet, maybe. We want that for them. But in the end, we also want to bless, whether you like it or not. When we talk about letting kids be their own gender and not talk about sexuality when they're in elementary school, the culture may think we're bigots. I think we're protecting kids. It's actually for the blessing of those around us. Let them hate us for it, but that's what we're doing. And we're not hating anybody who's doing different. We want them to know Jesus too. When we say, let's maybe not take your five-year-old to a drag queen show where they're stuffing dollar bills. I know we got kids with us. I'm being careful, kind of careful. It's not out of hatred. It's out of a desire to protect. That's why we do what we do. It's all about blessing our nation, not through power, but through influence, not through force, but through winning over, not winning over them, but winning them over to this point of view. Because the culture in the world has gone nuts, right? The ultimate goal, though, of course, God glorified, people become disciples. That's the ultimate goal. And so Jesus, talking through these things, and I've skipped just a little bit, says, hey, you know, I'm going to open my mouth in parables. I'll declare things kept secret from the foundation of the world. He's saying I'm fulfilling the prophecy of Psalm 78. And there's two things you need to know. Parables declare secret things. Actually, one thing. Parables declare secret things to those who have ears to hear and the spirit to interpret. So when you read parables, you need to know this. Parables are not just little stories so you can help you remember them. Parables declare the secret things of the kingdom of God. That's why you want to know them. That's why you want to dig in. Parables mean something. You're learning something about the kingdom, and so am I as we jump into these parables. Oh, it's not about power? It's not about the rule and reign of Christendom? No, it never was. It's about influence for the sake of Christ, to his glory, not ours. And that's all we got. Some of us have believed that if we just get the right person elected, and listen, elections make a difference. Absolutely, who's in charge matters. The Bible talks about that, when the righteous reign versus when the wicked do. Some of us have believed if we get the right person in power, everything will be great. Are you kidding me? The very framers of the country, and I'm not going political, I'm talking just philosophical. The very framers of the country said, you know, this ain't going to work unless the nation is a moral nation. Oh, get your right person in power. We'll see what happens in 4 years. And maybe 2 years after that. See what happens. Then he left the crowds. I love this part. His disciples approached him and said, explain to us the parable of the weeds in the field. You know, hey, Jesus, that was a great story, and we really get it, but we want to make sure you get it. So could you tell us, just, we want to make sure you understand, Jesus. By the way, well, what's the point of the story? And he replied, the one who sows the good seed is the Son of Man. The field is the world, not the church, the world. And the good seed, these are the children of the kingdom. This is you and I if you know Jesus. So Jesus teaches, he heals, he dies for, he resurrects. He adopts as children, because when you came to know Christ, you were adopted into his family. He says that's supposed to be good seed in the world, that which will bless the world, like that mustard seed. It's good seed, it blesses. That means that we are ambassadors representing another kingdom to this kingdom. With goodwill, we want to win them over. It means that we're agents of restoration among the fallen. We talked about that last week. That we're agents of truth and grace, because that's who we are. We're followers of Christ. And if you understand that, then that precludes, that does away with winning over as though we're better than. Ooh, let me say that again. If you know Jesus, you're not better than the people around you. You have received his grace. Thank God for that. You're not supposed to go and be an agent of that grace to those you know. That's hard, right? You got Thanksgiving coming up. Some of you didn't get blessed like I did with my wife's good cooking yesterday. You still got it coming up. I'm still going to get over. I'm thirsty as can be. I'm going to die here in a minute. You got to be an agent of grace to people that you know real well because they're in the family. It's one of the hardest things in the world. Pray. You're called to it. You're called to bless your world. Now he goes further and he says this. This is the hard part. Listen. The weeds are the children of the evil one. And the enemy who sowed them is the devil. Wait, children of the evil one? Are you saying that people can be children of the devil? Well, yeah, Jesus said in John 8, you're of your father, the devil. Yeah. And what happens is when you're born again, Jesus said to Lazarus, you must be born again, born a second time, born spiritually. When you're born again, you have a spiritual birth that brings you into God's family. Until that moment, you're not a child of God. Oh, created by God, sure, but children of God are those who have come to know Christ. And so the weeds are those who are not yet rescued from the domain of darkness as we have been and transferred into the beloved kingdom of his Son. And what that means is, just like the rest of our fallen world, there's damage, there's pain, there's sin, there's corruption. We struggle with it too. We still got that fallen nature. But by the very nature of somebody who doesn't know Jesus at all, there's free will, there's choice. and there's sin. And free will means I can choose the wrong things. And I will always affect others because none of us are an island. Always. In God's economy, disciples seek to be a blessing. That's who we are. We're disciples of Christ. We seek to be a blessing. You ever stop to think about why Jesus fed people? Not just to show a miracle. I mean, it was nice. It was good. He fed like thousands with a Lunchable. Why? Well, they're going to be hungry tomorrow. Yeah. But they're hungry right now, and I can bless them. Why heal people when they're going to die anyway? Like, you bring back Lazarus. Dude, I got to die a whole nother death. Yeah, but come on out for now. To bless his world, even if it was a temporary thing. We seek to be a blessing to those around us. In God's economy, disciples seek to be a blessing, knowing that embracing sin increases cursing, pain, and suffering. We don't want that in our world. I hate to see people suffer, and you do too. And so we seek to be a blessing. Blessing people in our lives, blessing our world. And we know that sin adds to the fallen world. And so the goal is that we want to see weeds become wheat. Listen, that can't happen. Weeds become wheat. Can't happen. Weeds are weeds. Wheat is wheat. In God's economy, it can, because nothing is impossible. Jesus, he gave me a new nature when I came to know him. God changes people. We want to bless them, and we want them to become children of God. Good seed. We do. Now, he goes on. He says, the harvest is the end of the age, and the harvesters are angels. This is where it gets hard. This is where it goes dark. Stay with me. Hey, Jesus, you're going to establish your kingdom now. You're going to punish the Gentiles, right? No, I'm going to. Now, hold on. We'll get to the darkness in a second. Now, he says, no, I'm going to. Now, watch this. I'm going to save the Gentiles and the Jews, my enemies, by dying for them. You're going to punish all the bad people. No, I'm going to die for them so that there's a way for them to come to know me through the faith in me and through what I did on the cross. Let this mind be in you, which was in Christ Jesus. Therefore, just as the weeds are gathered and burned in the fire, here's the dark part, so it will be at the end of the age. Listen, man, it is hard to spiritualize, to explain away what Jesus speaks so plainly of. Jesus talks more about hell than heaven. You get that, right? Because he's going to die in order to save people from hell. Because he loves people. Because he wants to warn them. Hell exists. And here's the hard part. You want it to exist. If you really think about it, don't you want hell to exist? Don't you think about the executive at some drug company? I was talking about this way before 2020, I promise. So this is not a political statement. Don't you think some executive who puts out some drug that he knows is going to kill a bunch of people, but he's done the numbers, and by the time they get sued, they're still going to make a bunch of money. Don't you want that guy to burn after he destroys families? Don't you? Don't you want to take and I know we get kids with this, the person who preys upon young kids and destroys them, they deal with it for the rest of their lives. Don't you want that person to burn? Don't you? We want hell to exist. Heck, I just think about the person who cut me off in traffic. And then I think, okay, Lord, that was a wrong thought. But at least could they maybe burn their finger or something today? I'm just saying, Lord, you want the guy who forces himself on women and they never again feel safe. You want that dude to burn. We want hell to exist. We just want to decide who goes. And we don't get to do that. Think about Sabbath wrote the song War Pigs. We think about those who start wars that don't have to be started for the sake of their egos or for the sake of profit and destroy so many. Well, I do want them to burn. I do. In my humanness, I do. You wanted to exist. You just want to decide who goes. And you don't get to do that. You get to pray for. Hey, Jesus, you're going to punish the Gentiles? You know what? I'm going to die for the Gentiles and the Jews who don't yet know me, who aren't walking by faith, so that they can come to know me. I'm going to be tortured to save them. Now, go and do likewise. Let this mind be in you. That's our heartbeat as believers. In the kingdom, we win. Means we sacrificed and we bled and we hurt in order to make our enemies our brothers and our sisters. That's what it means. That's it. When a missionary goes and they suffer and maybe even are killed by some of the tribesmen or tribeswomen, that's the gospel. when you put up with all sorts of crap and continue to love the person who's doing that to you at work? That's the gospel. You're doing it for the sake of Jesus. Otherwise, why do it? That's winning, because we know that hell is real. We know that it is eternal. And we're sober-minded enough, we're humbled enough by God's grace that we mourn those who will suffer. We desire grace for them as well. That's the heart of the Father. The Son of Man, he says, he's continuing on, will send out his angels, and they're going to gather from his kingdom all who cause sin and those guilty of lawlessness. Now, this is huge. This is huge. Because there are two he talks about, those who cause sin and those who are guilty of lawlessness. Guilty of lawlessness. Just a garden variety sinner won't follow Jesus. Rebellious to the kingdom. Those who don't know Jesus. Those who cause sin, cause others to stumble. Here's the thing. I can say, well, I don't do that, but I approve of those who do. And Jesus says, I can't hold you guiltless. I mean, this is huge. Huge, huge. In God's economy, those who call themselves by his name, yet encourage and give cover to sin in others are held accountable. Let me do it this way. It is not love to say, hey, you're fine, it's your lifestyle, I don't care. Hey, man, in fact, I think God loves you just as you are. That's not love. Love is, hey, I love you enough to tell you the truth because I want Jesus to change you. And if you disagree, I'm still going to love you, but I want you to know truth. That's love. Got a friend right now, he won't listen to this because he don't talk to me anymore, but I'll call him a friend because I know him on Facebook, so I'm sure we're really tight. Got a friend here in the valley, goes to a progressive church. I've looked at his Facebook wall, and I don't read it anymore. I told him we don't know the same Jesus. All of it is. It's just one verse. It really didn't mean anything. In fact, they just added that word in 1950. It doesn't really mean that. And giving cover to sin, encouraging sin. Love the latest drag queen show. Advertised it. Said, good on you for doing that. The world out there is beautiful. God will not hold guiltless those who encourage sin. And by the way, I've mentioned drag queen two or three times. If that bothers you and you want to know why it might be a problem, come and talk to me. Old Testament and New speaks about roles and men being men. We'll talk about it. I'd be glad to talk to you about it. No problem. Jesus says, then they will throw them into the blazing furnace where there'll be weeping and gnashing of the teeth. Man, you cannot spiritualize this mug. It is a horrific thing. That's why we want people to know Jesus. I don't want to win over them and say, look, see, I'm going to put it in your face. Look what I want to see them come to know my Christ because I was them. And I mean, I was. I didn't become a believer until I was 20 years old. I know the damage I've done. Then the righteous will shine like the sun in the Father's kingdom. Let anyone who has ears listen. The kingdom of heaven, I'm going to pass through this. I'm going to do this really, really quickly. I've got to do this. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like a large net thrown into the sea. It collected every kind of fish, and he's going to go and say that there's going to be a separation, and again, you've got this whole idea, the end of the age, and there's evil and righteous, and there's blazing furnace. You've got this whole thing again, heaven and hell. I can't explain this thing away. I don't want to. I want to be sober-minded enough to know that as much as you hate me and you think I'm a bad person because I love Jesus, I want you to know Jesus. Because I know what's waiting if you don't. It's that important. I'm going to pass all of this stuff up right here. I'm going to do it. I ain't got time. We don't win. Jesus has already won for us. And I want to close it this way. Stay with me. Colossians 2. You, speaking of us, who are dead in your trespasses and the uncircumcision of your flesh, the uncleanness of who you are as a human being because of sin. God made alive together with him, having forgiven us all of our trespasses, past, present, future. God forgave all of them on the cross, made the provision, every person forgiven. Did it by canceling the record of debt that stood against us with its legal demands. This he set aside, nailing it to the cross. So he takes the law and the law of conscience and nails it to the cross, pays it off. Doesn't do away with the law, pays off the requirements of it. Pleroo is the word that is used. Fulfills the law, nailing it to the cross. He disarmed the rulers and authorities. We're talking spiritually now. and put them to open shame because that's the enemy. By triumphing over them in him on the cross. He disarmed. How do you disarm the accuser of the brethren? Because that's what Satan is. How do you disarm him? You give him nothing to accuse you for. How can he accuse when it's already been paid for? That's what grace is. But he sinned when he paid in full, Jesus says. Devil says, but did you see what she just paid for? Paid in full. But I just think that paid in full. How do you disarm the devil? You give him no ammunition. He's the accuser of the brethren. That's the only power he has, that and deception. Jesus says, oh, yeah, I saw what they did, paid for. Oh, I saw, yeah, I know what they're going to do, paid for. Oh, I know, paid for. And I love them enough that by my Spirit I'm going to draw them back to me and discipline those I love. That is your God. He's already won. We don't win in the end. It's already been done. We're just waiting for everything to be brought to a close. Dude, the football game is over. It's not even close. We're just waiting for the final call. Let's go a little bit further. Winning is this. I told you before, it's what Jesus did, not what we do. It's for the people of God for whom Christ died, not against them. And it's never our goal. Our goal is faithfulness to God, glorifying Jesus in all things. In fact, if you read Ephesians 1, you'll read, to the praise of his glory, to the praise of his glorious grace, over and over again in Ephesians. It's all about glorifying him. So we're ambassadors of the kingdom of Christ. We want you to know Jesus. We're agents of restoration. We want to bring you back. We don't want to condemn you. We want to restore you. And we are those who are called to bless our culture, even if it hates us for trying to bless them. That's who we are. Buckle up, guys. We're in America 2022. Jesus is where your focus has to be. If your hope is in this world, you're pitiful. Cut it out. Jesus is where your hope is. I'm going to do it two ways. I'm going to pray in a minute, but first let me see questions, comments, disagreements. So we talked about a lot of